Good morning. I am Sunil, and I'm a professor of global health at Oregon State University. And I really want to thank my previous presenters for setting up the stage. In fact, I will get 5 extra minutes to talk now. Otherwise, I would have given a very quick primer on the class standards, something that we used in our study. So thank you very much for doing that. What we did, we took the recommendations of the class standards and develop a cultural competency training program, and I'm sure that you all have heard of many cultural competency training programs. So we developed one for our region in Oregon and implemented that and did an evaluation of that program in terms of improvement or changes in the knowledge and skills of people who participated. And this study is reporting the findings of that, and also some interesting themes emerged as a result of that training and conversations with people who participated, and I wanted to bring those themes up for discussion. We started our discussion with our local healthcare administrators in the Mid-Willamette Valley region in Oregon, which is predominantly a white region where almost more than 90 to 95% of the people trace their inheritance or their heritage back to Europe. And we started discussing the issue of cultural competency with them. And it was interesting that very quickly we had to make a very strong case for why cultural competency. Two things emerged in these initial discussions. One was questions like, do you think we are not culturally competent? And that is, if you spend enough time in this field, you know that that's the question that often people ask. And the second question was, well, are you going to really make people who participated in the training feel bad about who they are? So the answer to both of those questions was resoundingly no, and that did give me an opportunity to actually make a case for what cultural competency training is all about. In fact, I was forced to define cultural competency and also forced to link, in fact, asked to link cultural competency with patient-provider communication and then reducing health disparities. As I mentioned, we conducted this study in the Mid-Willamette Valley region. 43 physicians, nurse practitioners, registered nurses, and administrators. We wanted administrators there for reasons that I'll point out later. They undertook a 4-hour training on cultural competency and healthcare, the relationship between these two. The knowledge in terms of cross-cultural issues, cultural self-assessment, this turned out to be a very important part of the training. And then we discussed some of the skills that would be involved in effective cross-cultural communication. And instead of using a standard pre-then-post assessment tool, we looked into these journals of evaluation research, and what we found, that there was a very interesting tool that had not been used in short-term trainings like the cultural competency training that we were going to provide, and it's called as the post-then-pre tool, and I'll briefly talk about that on the next slide. It's a 29-item cultural competency assessment tool. 5 items relate to demographic knowledge, 19 items relate to knowledge about culture or cultural differences and its relationship with healthcare, and then there are 5 items that are based on the skills. And those of you who got the chance to look at the presentation, I had included that tool as an addendum to the presentation. You should be able to download a PDF version of this tool. Although a total of 60 physicians, nurse practitioners, RNs, and administrators signed up for the study, they attended the study, but they did not complete the post and pre tool, so we were not able to use the whole 60 physician sample. Out of the 43 who did complete the survey, 32 were women, 11 were men. This is not surprising to us. 34 were providers, and 9 were administrators. So 9 administrators showed up. That was very impressive for us. The post-then-pre tool has been used. It has been developed by evaluation researchers and has been used in short-term training to assess the impact or outcome of short-term training. And the questions are asked only once at the end of the training. And each question, the respondent will have to fill in 2 sections for each question. One is, how do they answer this question now that they have completed their training? And then the next section is how they think they would have answered this question before the training. So what the research suggests that it reduces, especially for short-term training, like 4-hour training, 5-hour training that we had, it reduces response shift bias and also reduces ideal reporting. We found that pre than post had more ideal reporting than post than pre. So we ended up using that tool. And this is the definition of cultural competency that we use. And what I want to point out is the emphasis on system, agency, and professionals. And once I started my presentation with this definition, I could literally hear like a sigh of relief among people who were participating in the training, saying that cultural competency is solely not their responsibility, that they are embedded in a system, in an agency, where priorities will have to shift if they were to be completely culturally competent. So it was a kind of a nice buffer for them. What we found as a result of our training that for almost every question, and these questions relate to such questions like health differences exist between race and ethnic groups, so how the respondent after the training would answer this question versus how they would have answered it before the training. And what we found that for almost for every item, 29 items, there was a positive shift, except for one item, which was also expected, that before training, many of the respondents said yes to the question, culture, race, and ethnicity can be used interchangeably. And after the training, they developed a nuanced understanding of that question, that these were very different terms, very different labels, and they meant different things to people. We also found that self-reported cases of where physicians and healthcare providers felt that there was an improvement in their knowledge and skills. And the post then pre method, they liked that method. They felt that they were able to answer the questions more honestly. But here are some of the unexpected findings that we had. One was, during the discussion, a lot of participants pointed out that culture perhaps was too broad a category for analysis, that they at times felt in their previous trainings that they had that they were essentially looking for a cheat sheet as to how to deal with a patient from a different cultural background, and felt that that cheat sheet often did not work. In our training, we didn't really provide that kind of a cheat sheet, but what we did, we emphasized more on how worldview is shaped by cultures. What is the relationship between culture and the way we think and the way we imagine health and illness and disease and healthcare, and also our communication style. So we focused more on that rather than saying that people belonging to this culture do this and that culture behave in a certainly in a different way. So that discussion was very lively in an open session where participants pointed out that culture perhaps was not a viable category, that we should be thinking about this tension between individual and culture, that sometimes people belonging to certain cultures may not behave in that stereotypic manner, which is exactly what we find every day. So we started discussing other categories like subcultures and at times countercultures. And we also felt that another important discussion that came up was the transient communities. And by transient communities, a lot of providers pointed out that that their patients were members of these online communities. And in online communities, they had developed a certain way of communicating. And it was a more evidence-based communication where they were printing out the papers and the pieces of information that they were getting from WebMD and other resources. And they were taking their encounters with the physician back to those web-based communities and discussing that. So they said that perhaps next step could be to think about how these transient cultures develop and what is the relationship between these transient cultures and patient-provider communication. And then a very interesting part of the discussion was about how do we, are there some tools available for patients who are happy cultures, which means people who define themselves as multi-ethnic or multicultural or multiracial. And so what are some of the things that we should be thinking about in communication with that? I don't really have answers to those questions, but I just wanted to point out to you. But actually, thank you very much. This was my brief presentation. So, thank you.